Today on Radio Gorgeous, I am welcoming Leila Abulela, who is an award-winning novelist and playwright. All of her novels seem to end up on the orange long list. She can't write one that doesn't end up there. They seem to attract them. In any event, but we're here today to talk about your collection of short stories, Elsewhere Home. Welcome, Leila.
Thank you.
Can you tell me about the collection of short stories?
Yeah, this collection, Elsewhere Home, has short stories that I've written over 20 years. So some of these short stories were the ones that I first started writing, and some of them are ones that I've recently written, and they're all they all have the theme of, you know, where is home, and they involve characters who've moved from one place to the other, and they're having trouble settling in or not settling in and things like that. Yeah,
all of your characters sort of seem to meet at those intersections of culture.
Yes, there is this intersection of culture. Because I grew up in Sudan, and I moved in my mid-20s to Scotland, to live in Scotland. So it was a big move for me. And I thought that because I spoke English fluently, and because I had visited London for holidays many times, and I thought that I would actually just stroll in and everything would be easy, and everything would be, I'll take things within my stride. But I found it actually quite hard to fit in. I found the weather difficult, the winters difficult. I was homesick, in an exaggerated sort of way. So all these things found their way within the stories, and there's a lot of that in the stories.
Yes, I have to say that would chime with my experience.
Oh, really?
Coming in my late 30s, with an infant, it was a big move from the States. And then I think, my husband's English, I speak, come on, how different could it be?
Yes.
Well, I found out. Mm-hmm. I'm still finding out. and I'm still homesick. But then also, once you're here, you're no longer of there.
Exactly. And then when you go back, things have changed, and people have moved on, and you're still kind of like hankering for the old times. And so after a while, of course, you realize that, even going back is going to be difficult, and you might never be able to go back. And in a way, then you have made a new home for yourself, but it's different somehow. It's not exactly the same. It's not the same replica.
Yes, you're neither fish nor fowl.
Yes.
And what prompted your move to Scotland?
Well, my husband got a job in the oil rigs in Aberdeen. And so I actually arrived there with a 4-year-old son and a 2-week-old baby, and with my husband going offshore frequently. So I was, it was hard in that respect as well. And it would be like, oh, he's away 2 weeks. And I tell people back home, oh, he just goes away 2 weeks and come back. And they'll say to me, oh, that's nothing, 2 weeks. And then they used to drag, really, the days would really, really drag.
And that does feature in one of your stories.
Yes, it's
because when you're on that type of schedule, it's not just they're not just gone for 2 weeks and back for 2 weeks. Mm. They're not back yet when they get back.
Yes, yeah.
And they're preparing to go before they go, and it's sort of, I remember I had a long distance relationship with my husband, and I would call it like pockets of honeymoon.
Mm-hmm.
And I was worried that our relationship was becoming that. But so, and tell me, were you writing when you already moved to Aberdeen, or did you start writing there?
No, I was always, I loved reading. Since I was young, I just loved reading. I was always reading, but I studied the statistics in university. And I just, the thought of writing just wasn't there. It wasn't something that people I knew did, or my family would ever approve of, or it just wasn't the sort of thing I would do. And there wasn't an urge to write. I really didn't have anything I wanted to say. But then when I moved to Scotland, suddenly there were things I wanted to say. And the reading took on a different, more serious level. I used to go to the public library in Aberdeen, And I became very interested in women's writing. I remember reading Testament of Youth, and that made a big impression on me. And and Maya Angelou, and I became interested sort of in feminism and this idea of being, I mean, what's happening to me? Why am I stuck at home with these kids? Is this me? Is this not me? And so I you know, I turned to novels and to reading to find a conversation about this. And then that kind of went on to the writing, that's how it's kind of started, wanting to sort of have a conversation about these things through the stories. And I found myself leaning towards fiction rather than nonfiction. And I did think I would write nonfiction, but it just didn't come out well. My voice wasn't in the nonfiction; it was more in the fiction. And so what started out as the bored housewife with a hobby ended up being something more than that.
Yeah. Well, it sounds to me like, you know, at home in Sudan, as you say, writing, it wasn't in your purview. But you were surrounded by family and culture and familiarity. And then when you moved to what sounds like rather a lonely time, early motherhood is quite isolating in and of itself,
yes.
Let alone being in bloody Aberdeen. but quite a culturally remote place from you, but also physically, and you know, you're Sudanese, you're not Scottish, again, isolating, and your husband isn't there. So adult conversation for you, I imagine, was...
Oh, it was really limited. Yeah, it was very much, yeah.
But you got to talk to Maya Angelou and Vera Brittain. You know, you decided, well, if I have to choose my conversational partners, I'm going to get really good ones.
That's true. And that's why I love fiction. And I can imagine myself stopping writing, but I can't imagine stopping reading. I mean, reading is really my first love. Yeah. And in those days, there wasn't the book groups yet. And there wasn't these kind of things that developed after that. So there was just the library and going and borrowing the books, and that was great. And there were lots of anthologies of women writers in those days. They used to do, collections of short stories by different women writers. I remember one was great. It was called The Secret Self, and it had all sorts of writers in it. Doris Lessing, just a wide range of writers. And Virago were publishing their modern classics, and the Women's Press was going strong. They had Alice Walker. And so I read a lot of that, yeah.
And did you feel, as a Muslim woman, as a Sudanese woman, as a North African woman, was that a barrier to you? Or was that, you know, did you hear voices like yours? Was that a barrier, or was that not a barrier?
Well, being in Aberdeen, the number of Africans in general, Muslims in general, was very, very low. So we were really quite a minority. And that is a good thing and a bad thing in one way. In a way, you're more sort of lonely because there's less of you around. On the other hand, there's less hostility, or there's less problems. So we are not a problem because we are basically, there's so few of us.
You're ignorable.
We're ignorable, yes, exactly. So,
for better or worse.
For better or worse, yeah. So I never had any sort of horrible experiences. It was all very peaceful, you know, and very sort of safe and peaceful. But then there wasn't these people that you, there wasn't so much, there wasn't, you know, the food wasn't available, there wasn't the availability of an atmosphere. But I made quite good friends with other, you know, immigrant women. We got close to each other, and we used to get our kids together. And so I had a lot of close female friendships, and that helped me, as I went along. Yeah.
I would say I find that, you know, in London anyway, that like initially getting here, all my friends were expats, because the Londoners, they didn't need me. You know, mm-hmm. They have family, they yes. have friends. They've been here, you know, they've been doing it without me. Mm-hmm. I had that at home, like, But yeah, so I think that's quite a common experience. Tell me about putting together this collection. So you're revisiting some stories from when you were first starting out. And is it like visiting an old friend?
Yes, it was actually quite emotional working on you know on these stories and editing them and updating them and reading them all again. You know, some of them I hadn't read for a long time, and I could tell that you know the earlier stories there was a lot of homesickness and a lot of sadness in them, and then things kind of started to perk up a bit, and then you'd get more interaction between you know the Sudanese characters and the Scottish characters, a lot more tension, a lot more friction. Mostly in romantic situations. And then some of the stories I wrote at the end were more sort of cosmopolitan, and the characters are more comfortable, and they're more like citizens of the world, and they kind of have a more relaxed attitude. So I could see this the development of the stories over the years.
Yes, because I was going to say there is some sort of progression. And it also depends where people are. Mm. You know, there's a wedding in Khartoum.
Yes.
That really struck me as perceptions of ourselves. You know, because we think, you know, Westerners think, oh, we're living in this fabulous, you know, place and we're so sophisticated. And then you take the Scottish man and you bring him to Khartoum. And actually, you know, she's there having a marvelously sophisticated time, and he's completely out of his comfort zone.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
That's all of us. You know? And it's a matter of perception and how you perceive yourself one place and how you perceive yourself in another place.
Yeah, this was this story, something old, something new. I wrote that sort of mid-career after I'd been writing for many years, and I've been writing from a Sudanese point of view. And so this time I switched and I wrote about this this Scottish man going to Khartoum and seeing it, you know, from through his eyes. So for me, that was the challenge. But it was interesting as well to be able to, you know, to see things from his point of view. And he also has the wariness and the awkwardness that anybody would feel when they're in a new place.
Yeah, exactly. And I found you quite an agile writer in that way, in that ability. There's a fluidity with place, and there is also a fluidity with characters, and being able to place yourself or place the reader and the narrator in many different places. It struck me that you're a very observant person, necessarily. But yeah, I loved the story. I think for people here, Farida's eyes, because it did touch on so many of our stereotypes, and then going deeper.
Okay. Yeah.
Immigrants coming here, what they're experiencing, what we perceive their lifestyles to be, where intervention comes in, and where, you know, and it was a really, again, and then also from the teacher's point of view, what she saw, how Farida saw herself, how her parents saw her, all of those things coming together. It was a really tight
story. Good. That's good to hear that. No, that story was very much about the little girl having problems with her eyesight, and the teacher noticing that and noticing that she needs to wear glasses. And so I focused, this was one of the stories where it doesn't have a lot of background descriptions. We're not really sure where they are, this family, or, you know, who they are, or whether they're Muslims or Christians, or it leaves it vague, and it just focuses on the issue of the child and her relationship with her teacher. Yeah.
And yet the other teachers having stereotype, you know, like her seeing through something and them not seeing through something. And those shifting perceptions. Were you at all, there's one story that, you know, okay, I'm going to slow myself down. A lot is made of the fact that you're a Muslim woman from Sudan writing. If you take that out, you're a great writer. But so is that, I mean, on one hand, yes, that's great. Yes. And a lot of your stories are from the point of Muslim women. But they're stories, and, you know, it could be anybody, and it could be any woman, it could be any person. Is that sort of a love-hate sort of thing, being in that sort of the poster child for Muslim women writers?
I don't really think I'm the poster child for Muslim women writers. I wouldn't think of myself that way. I think it's the reader who sees that or not sees that. I mean, if a reader can see beyond the fact that this is about a Muslim woman, or this is about her wearing hijab, then that's good for the reader. But then maybe some readers don't, and that's fine. I mean, you can't as a writer, you write, then you know, the story just goes away, and it's every reader has a different relationship with the story. So I don't have control over that. This isn't something I can control. But you know, I'm more and more I'm confident of what I'm doing. I'm confident of my writing. So it doesn't matter to me whether people say to me, that this is the voice of the Muslim woman or this isn't, because I don't need the approval anymore, you know. Yeah.
You've earned your chops.
Yes. That's the advantage of being 54, I think.
There's got to be some. Yes. So, because then there's also a story that, you know, is just some English people or some UK people or whatever they are. But, you know, and it has nothing, you know, none of those voices in it. And it is a completely rounded, incredibly well-observed story as well.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and also from a male perspective. So, you know what I mean? So this, you know, there's lots of boundaries there. Tell me how you approach short stories as opposed to novels. Are short stories that something, are things that come to you, and novels things you chase, or?
I mean, novels are like a big, huge investment. You know, I know I'm going to be in the same, working on the same theme with the same characters for maybe, you know, 2 years, 3 years. So I really have to be committed. And I spend a lot of time, you know, hesitating whether I'm going to write this novel or not, whether I'm going to commit myself, whether I'm going to invest, you know, all these years in it. So there is really a lot of, heeing and hawing at the beginning. Whereas with a story, it's not such a big commitment. So even if I do get an idea which is different or wacky or whatever, then why not? It's 2,000 words. I could do that, as you mentioned, the little story, the aromatherapist's husband. Yeah, so that one was just, that started as a character sketch of this woman who was an aromatherapist. And so I decided then to just make it as a story, and it's a very brief one. It's 1,200 words, and that's great. You don't want to, I can't say more about this couple, and so that's
they
that's
weren't
good.
People you wanted to spend 2 to 3
exactly,
years with.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
But that's a funny relationship. It's because you're sort of creating characters and then interviewing them.
In a way, yeah. And of course, some of them are based, I mean, you're not meant to say that, but some of them are based on people that I know. But and then you kind of change it so that, you know, so that you're not offending anybody or whatever. But sometimes people do make a big impression on me. And so I do write about them, I suppose. Or I combine them with different characters. You kind of make you know, you have two different characters and you kind of make a new character out of that. Yeah.
Getting strands from...
Strands, yes.
From
strands
everywhere.
Are different.
Tell me, what are you reading right now?
Well, I'm actually proud to say that I'm reading Howard's End. Because I saw the film and I hadn't read the novel. So I thought I would read the novel. And it's just so easy to read. It's so comforting. I'm finding it really easy to read. And so I'm planning to read it. And then I'm planning to read Zadie Smith on Beauty, because I heard that she based it on Howl's End. So that's my plan, to do the two
Excellent.
Books together. Yeah.
Fabulous summer reading.
Yes.
Yes, you've got a plan.
I've got a plan, yes.
Excellent. Layla, thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous.
Oh, you're welcome.